Could general aviation's accident rate be partly the result of low expectations? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Max Trescott, 2008 National CFI of the Year, general aviation advocate. You can find his blog at maxtrescott.com. First of all, welcome in and thanks for taking a few minutes out today.
Paul, great to be talking with you again.
Max, I wanted to talk to you today about the safety goals set by the FAA and their effect on our general aviation safety record versus the airlines. This is an interesting topic. Somebody called my attention several months ago to the fact that the FAA's latest safety goal didn't even target an improvement. Is that true? And B, what's going on here?
Yeah. Kind of interesting. I wouldn't call these goals. I mean, these are softball, pitches. These are unbelievable. The FAA's current performance target for GA, and by the way, they have no long-term plan right now for GA safety. So the only goal that they list in their operations plan is for a 2008 goal that allows the number of GA fatal accidents to increase by 3% from the 314 accidents that occurred in 2007. That means they'll allow 325 accidents to occur in 2008. And if they keep accidents from, not increasing by 3%, then they get a green mark on their scorecard and everybody gets, one more checkpoint toward their bonuses and things like that, which I find, absolutely amazing.
I would think that the negative publicity from setting a quote goal, unquote, like that would be more of a problem for the FAA politically than not making a more aggressive goal.
And I think setting more aggressive goals makes a heck of a lot of sense. Now, to be fair, I think part of the reason that the 2008 goal looks kind of absurd is that the 2007 numbers came in lower than they thought they were going to, which makes now the 2008 goal look higher. But nonetheless, we still ought to have a proactive plan for reducing accidents all the time and not just keep the old goals just because we got lucky at one point in time. And so, yeah, I would contrast that with what's been going on the commercial aviation side of things. If you look just over 10 years ago, the FAA set a goal to reduce the commercial aviation fatalities by 80%. And at the time, everybody thought that was absolutely absurd. But the reality is they actually succeeded in reducing the fatality rate by more than 60%. So I think that's a great example of when you set huge, audacious, bold goals that you achieve far more than when you set these little softball goals.
We talked at Lakeland about the general aviation accident rate, comparing it to the accident fatality rate in commercial aviation. And at the time, you commented that general aviation will never be as safe as commercial airline travel is. What could we do to narrow that gap, though? Because if I understand correctly, in ballpark figures, you're about 100 times as likely to die in a general aviation accident per hours flown as you are in an airline. That seems to be an awfully big disparity. What are the factors that make those rates so far apart?
And I don't know if that's the exact number, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's somewhere in that particular magnitude. I think a couple of things. The first one probably is the fact that we've got two pilot crews in commercial aviation, and the data has shown that in general, two pilots are safer than a single pilot. Most of the commercial aircraft are also jet aircraft, so they're more capable. They're flying above the weather in many cases, whereas piston aircraft are usually, down there in the weather. So those are a couple of things that pop out immediately. Another thing which is kind of interesting in the way we keep score on these things, right now the scorecard for the FAA is basically the number of accidents, not the accident rate. Whereas on the commercial side, they're actually measuring the rate, that is the number of fatalities that occur per million miles flown. And so obviously, if you're counting the number of something, that's going to be impacted highly by the amount of activity that's going on. So let's take an example. Suppose we look at the number of fatalities that are going on in cars in this country. If everybody cuts their driving in half, well, you would kind of expect the number of accidents to decline by 50%. That's exactly how most of the gains in general aviation safety are being measured these days. As the number of hours that are flown each year decreases slightly, so do the number of accidents, and everybody is claiming, hey, look at this, the number of accidents are going down. However, the underlying rate, the rate at which the accidents actually occur, has barely changed. It's dropped about 7-8% in the last 10 years.
Well, there's also a big disparity in terms of the number of operations within a number of hours flown. For a weekend recreational VFR general aviation pilot, if he flies an hour to some place to get a $100 hamburger and then flies an hour back, he's had two takeoffs and landings. Airliners fly, you know, a couple hundred people for those same 2 hours and go thousands of miles and make one takeoff and landing. So, I mean, there are a couple of other statistical things that skew it. But aside from the model of how we fly, what are some of the differences that we actually could attack in terms of the ways in which flight in an airliner is different from flight in a general aviation aircraft?
Sure. I think that something that would make a lot of sense would be for everyone, once they get their private pilot's license, to figure out what personal minimums they're going to use whenever they fly, and essentially come up with a operations book, if you will, much like Part 135 operators have, so that they decide, you know, that they will not fly at the bare legal minimums that are permitted by the FAA, but they're going to choose to set higher standards for themselves and fly to those higher standards. In fact, I'm going to actually propose this fall, when the private PTS is revised, that personal minimums be part of the oral discussion that's required. I was rather shocked when I gave a presentation to a local pilot group recently, and I asked if anybody knew about personal minimums, and not a single hand went up. So I think what's happened over the years is pilots who've gotten their licenses many years ago don't even know about the personal minimums concept. Those who've gotten their license in recent years have heard about it. But we ought to have a requirement when folks are having that discussion with the examiner as to exactly what are personal minimums and how do you plan to use them after you get your license. And we see a lot of accidents where people could have exercised good judgment, could have exercised personal minimums, and avoided accidents. And probably the best example of that would be people who take off in nearly zero visibility. Now, the airlines aren't allowed to do that, but as individuals, we are permitted to do that. But pilots probably, you know, should set their own personal standards and decide, you know, I'm going to require whatever visibility it takes for me to at least get back to this airport if I have some type of problem after I take off.
You know, the only thing more amazing to me than the fact that pilots will take off at below FAA minimums in some cases is the fact that they'll then, in some cases, post it on YouTube.
Yep, I guess we've become a YouTube society, haven't we?
Well, you know, our mutual friend Bob Miller pointed out that, you know, when the FAA sets something as a minimum in the regulations, the FAA is saying, we will not allow the best of you to do this. And the other 99% of us look at that and are sometimes frustrated because we look at that as a limit on our personal minimums.
Yeah.
And we need to turn that around.
No, I agree. In fact, by the same token, I don't think anybody ever wants to brag to their friends that, you know, they got their pilot's license by meeting the minimum standards of the FAA to become a pilot. You know, likewise, when we fly with passengers, we shouldn't be using the minimum standards to fly either.
Right. Well, Max, when we come back, since you've opened this Pandora's box, I want to ask you about some things that you would have as goals for the FAA. Have you given that some thought?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. We'll be back in a moment. My guest is Max Trescott, 2008 National CFI of the Year and General Aviation Advocate. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott. We're talking about general aviation safety and why the bar has been set so low traditionally by the FAA. Max, before we get into anything about the specific goals, let's talk about how we can even measure them, because the FAA has no mechanism to accurately measure hours flown in general aviation at that point. Is there a way we can attack that?
Well, actually, the FAA and industry has attacked that, and they've really finally come up with what they themselves agree are reasonably good numbers. So there have been voluntary surveys in the past to try and measure initially the number of air taxi hours flown, but then later the number of general aviation hours flown. And I just picked up a copy of the 2000 book from the FAA on the general aviation statistics. And it's amazing. They have very accurately, through a huge number of surveys, sent out and measured the number of hours of activity in 2006. So we really do have the baseline data now, and that data is agreed by everyone to be far better than what we had before. And, of course, we still are seeing a little bit of a decline year to year, but at least we've got a more precise measurement which to build a rate data. So instead of counting the number of accidents, we truly can measure the accident rate. And so in the past, that data really hasn't been used because, you know, the different aviation groups felt that perhaps the data was inaccurate. But now I think everybody agrees that we really can figure out what the underlying rate is.
Is there a way to get it even more accurate? Because when you say survey and you say estimate, and I know that in some cases, too, they've tried to estimate it based on general aviation aircraft fuel sales. Do we need to go to a system where every time your plane gets an annual, the number on the Hobbs is reported into some database?
Oh, absolutely. I think that makes the most sense because that's going to give us a very, very accurate number. And another possible way to do it would be to take a look at the medical data. Every time someone goes in for a medical, they have to report the number of hours that they've accumulated. But I think what you propose is actually probably the best possible way to measure the data.
I was going to say, if it was reported by pilot, then you'd leave out sport pilots completely. You would also potentially miss some hours flown by in machines by, you know, under other circumstances where it didn't result in somebody renewing a medical 2 years later and that sort of thing. So,
yep, that's true. And maybe the difference is that with medical data, that data exists today and you could theoretically go and mine it. I'm not sure that the annual data exists today, but clearly if we could collect that data, that would give us a good indication of how many hours are flown per year. And then we could truly find out, is the underlying accident rate decreasing?
Okay, the two big questions that result from this whole discussion, Max, are: what goals would you set, and how would you achieve them? Let's start with the first half.
Well, I think that the FAA and all the other industry organizations really ought to come up with an aggressive goal. In the past, I think they've looked at relatively small goals for general aviation for fear that they're going to be difficult to achieve. Just as there was an 80% goal set for commercial, I think that we ought to have probably a 50% goal set for general aviation accident rate by, say, the year 2020 or 2025. And if we set something with a really high bar like that, then I think everyone will work even harder to find innovative new ways to achieve that goal. Now, fortunately, there are not going to be any silver bullets. There's not going to be any, one quick fix. It's probably going to be, dozens of small little things applied to make it successful. But if we take a look at just a couple of them, we can focus initially on the areas of greatest risk. So, for example, night flying. Less than 5% of all the flying is done at night, and yet 21% of all the fatal accidents are night. So I think we need to do a better job of educating people as they're getting their training about the risk of night flight, for example.
You mentioned night flight. Night flight is not a whole lot different from instrument flight. I mean, over a lot of parts of this country at night, you are flying on instruments, essentially. There is a movement underway by a couple of educational institutions, and Cessna and Cirrus are both working on this, to come up with a syllabus for a private pilot course that integrates instrument training at the same time. Is this a step forward?
Oh, absolutely. I think Middle Western Tennessee University did some studies on this a year or two ago where they ran students through a combined instrument private curriculum, if you will, and they then tested these folks against people who'd come out through the separate curriculum, and they scored extremely high in virtually all the measures. So I think it makes a lot of sense. The sooner we can get people instrument rated, the sooner they're going to be safer in all situations, whether it's at night or whether it's an inadvertent VFR into IMC type situation. Also, if you look at night flying, it's kind of interesting that Canada has a separate night rating. You have to have an additional 10 hours of training to be able to fly at night in Canada. Here in the U.S., people don't get that additional training until they get their commercial license. So we ought to look at ways to get more night flying experience to people sooner, and that would definitely increase safety.
Let me ask a really ugly Big Brother question. Do we need to determine through some sort of examination process and then mandate or stamp on a certificate personal minimums? Should these be personal minimums that are determined through some process and actually made part of, your rating, or do we leave this up to the pilot's discretion?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I suspect at this point it probably makes sense to leave it up to discretion, but you could theoretically set minimums based upon the level of experience or the number of ratings people have or things like that. Again, I'm not sure that one-size-fits-all type regulation like that is going to solve the problem. But it certainly, anything that gets people to focus more on personal minimums would definitely be a benefit.
All right. Now, you're not the FAA now. You're Max Trescott. You're back to being a general aviation advocate. What do you tell pilots in terms of – what do you teach us in terms of developing personal minimums?
Sure. So basically, I ask folks to take a look at both the kind of the conventional minimums that you'll find listed as well as some of the unconventional minimums as well. So, for example, the FAA has this really excellent personal minimums checklist, and it's a two-page sheet that lists the suggested criteria to take a look at. So some of these things would be under the PAVE acronym for pilot, aircraft, environment, and then external factors. So, for example, for the pilot, they'll take a look at recency of experience or number of hours, for example, in a particular type of aircraft. And that's a huge factor right there. I'm not sure that a lot of people understand that most of the accidents are occurring to folks with under 100 hours in the particular type of aircraft in which they have the accident. So even 10,000-hour pilots are not going to be particularly experienced in an airplane where they've got 10 or 15 hours. So anything that focuses people's attention on these particular risk factors and gets them to be a little bit more careful and to take extra precautions when they're in these high-risk areas, such as when they've got less than 100 hours in a particular type of aircraft, is going to make a lot of sense.
Well, Max, I think I've just hit upon a solution to our problems. The FAA is looking for a full-time permanent administrator. I think you're the guy.
You know what? I think that Bobby Sturgill is doing a great job, and unfortunately, I think he's coming at a time where there's just a lot of things have hit the fan simultaneously. So I have great empathy for him, and I think he's going to continue to work really hard. So believe me, I'm not looking for that job.
Well, listen, Max, we appreciate you taking some time out for our listeners today. We'll direct our listeners to maxtrescott.com. That's maxtrescott.com for Max's blog and links to his other work. Max, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.